Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the show. I appreciate your listenership so much. I'm your host, Sam Peebles. I'm looking forward to getting into this episode. This episode, we're going to talk about none other than the top prospects in the Braves farm system. Figured it was a great time to do that, and my buddy Brian Custard knows more about the prospects than anybody else I know, so we're going to get him involved as well. I can't wait to get started. Let's go. So, prior to the start of the minor league seasons, it had been 514 days since the last minor league baseball game had been played. What a great thing for these players to be able to get back and do what they love. So, without further ado, let's jump into the top prospects and talk about where they rate, what their skills look like, how they rate among their peers and everything. There are some caveats we need to put out there first, just like in any other exercise. For this one, we need to realize that there are going to be some players that you recognize that are currently on the Major League roster. Well, that is because to lose your prospect status and it to become officially your rookie season, you have to have at least 45 days of Major League service time or 130 plate appearances. So the players you hear in this ranking have not reached that threshold yet. Therefore, they're still technically a prospect. So I don't want to throw them out because they're on the Major League roster because they're still on the prospect list, and it'll do injustice for the rest of the list to change things up. So I'm going to keep them on the prospect list, and we'll talk about them as if they're prospects. Okay, you've seen them on the Major League field, but let's talk about how they were graded as prospects and things like that. Okay, so let's start with number 10. Number 10 is currently Michael Harris. You've probably heard of him. He's created a lot of buzz, and he's turned a lot of heads. He's in A-plus minors, and he's already ranked number 10. He did jump up two spots from last year as the prospect rankings ended last year on MLB.com. He was number 12 back in 2020 at the end of the year, and he jumped up two spots. That is technically probably because he moved up one due to Ian Anderson graduating, but he still jumped up a spot on his own from the end of last year. So things are looking good for him. Another fun and interesting fact about him is typically when you look at any team's top 10 prospects, most of the prospects were drafted in the first two rounds. Michael Harris, who is only 20 years old, has already made it into the top 10 in the system when being drafted 98th overall in the third round. So that's pretty cool. As far as scouting grades go, if you don't remember from last year, scouting grades go from a scale of 20 to 80. To me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That means a guy like me, who probably sucks at baseball right now, being as old as I am, would get a 20 if I just showed up and got graded. Don't really understand that there, but we'll say that that's because that's the grading they're using. They're using a 20 from 80 scale. His hit tool is a 50, his run is 60, his fielding is 50, his power is 50, his arm is 60, and his overall is 45. Not truly understanding that grade. If every single grade is higher than 45, why is his overall 45? So if you were to average the other five out, his overall would actually be a 54. So I'm just going to be honest with you, I have no idea why they graded the overall as 45 if they're looking at something that I'm not looking at. But I would say his overall ranking based on their grade should be a 54. So far in 57 games, he's looked very solid, and he's still young. He's striking out a little bit too much with 42 strikeouts in 53 games, but he's able to steal bases. He's already got 9 of them. His on-base percentage is very solid at .343, and his average is .279. So he is doing well, and he's already doing better than that as the season started. Of course, it's a small sample size at the time of this recording. He's had 4 games, and he's outperforming his career averages, so that's great. Although he is still striking out 5 times more than he is walking, which really needs to be fixed before he makes it to the major league level. If he can fix that and do kind of like pull a Ronald Acuna and drop his strikeout rate like Ronald did, Michael Harris looks like he could be something very special. One more interesting fact from Michael Harris before we move on to the next prospect. He initially went to college to be a pitcher, and he has turned it around and found out that he is much more successful as a hitter and defender. So it's pretty cool to see that happen. The guy is a stud, it looks like, and he has the type of talent to be something special. It is important to know that many scouts believe that Harris still does have a little bit more development time. He's not to the point to where he's going to contribute this year. You will hear people call for him if Pache struggles, which it seems like he is. But just remember, odds of that happening are very slim. Major League Baseball and some other scouts believe that it'll be in 2023 when he becomes a full-time starter. Next on the list at number 9, who was number 10 last year and moved up one spot due to Ian Anderson graduating from the farm system, is Yasiel De La Cruz. I'm pretty excited about this guy. I think he can really contribute to the team, and I think he can do it soon. His grades overall are very solid, which is one thing I'm excited about, right? He's estimated to possibly be here in 2021, which could be a huge boost for the Braves. He was not drafted. He was signed in 2015 by the Braves, so he's been in the system the entire time. In 2015, so he's been in the system for 6 years. He's 23 years old. He's a prime candidate to help the Braves soon. All right, so I'm really excited about him. His best thing is out of a scale from 20 to 80, he's got a very solid fastball at 60. He's got a 55 on his slider. His changeup is a 45. They're giving him an overall of 45. Me, personally, I'm not a professional scout, but I would definitely rate him higher than an overall 45. I think the reason that they're rating him lower is because he needs to work on his control. He did look very solid, though, last year in 2019 between 3 different levels. His average against was a little bit high at 214, but his whip or walks and hits per inning pitched was pretty solid at 1.14 across 3 levels. It's hard to use a full prospect's career in the minors as a cumulative for things like ERA because they work on things to get better. So I like looking at his last year. And he went through 3 different levels in his last year and was still able to work a pretty solid earned run average of 3.25. Now, we all know that on the surface, ERA does not show everything, but it is promising that he was able to keep runs off the board. His walks are a bit high, though. In 25 games, he had 49 walks, which is quite high, but just imagine if he can get his control down and not walk as many batters, how low his whip would be. Now again, this is across 3 levels in 2019, so it doesn't translate exactly to the major league level, of course, but still, if he can get his walks down, I think it can be something special, especially since he had 121 strikeouts in only 133 innings. He can throw up close to 100 miles per hour. He hits 98 miles per hour pretty often with his fastball. And with his control issues, it looks like he might be more of a bullpen piece. But hey, the Braves need bullpen just as much as they do starters. So, especially with the Braves' bullpen issues, we might actually see him this year. Bonus points, he's right-handed, and the Braves could really use right-handed relievers. So, I think odds are high that we may see him this year. Next, at number 8, who was also number 8 last year, is Tucker Davidson. A lot of us are excited about him. He made his major league debut last year in a relief outing, but that was very late in the year. He hasn't been able to contribute to the club as much as we'd like. He's a left-handed guy who looks like he's going to be a starter, even though he made a relief appearance. That may be why he's being blocked. Who knows? But things have been promising for him. He's got a 97-mile-per-hour fastball, and he grades well on the rest of his pitches as well from a scouting standpoint. If we look at those grades again, he's got a fastball at 60, curveball at 50, a control of 50, a changeup of 50, and an overall 50. One thing I want to add is that last year, while at the alternate training site, he developed a slider that seems to be pretty solid as well. So he's got an arsenal of 4 pitches, which is rare these days. So he changed from a 3-pitch mix to a 4-pitch mix, which could really help him. He seems to also be good at getting ground balls, which is always nice. A lot of times pitchers focus so much on strikeouts and forget that ground balls are just as important. And I'll give you a good example. He actually had a few more walks last year than De La Cruz. His whip is a .10 higher. So, you know, De La Cruz's was 1.14. Tucker Davidson's is a bit higher at 1.25. However, his ERA has been a full point lower, actually a full point and a half lower, at 2.15. Last year, he started off strong. This year with a 1.29. Of course, that was only in one game. But the difference here is that even though Tucker Davidson has walked a little bit more guys and struck out a few more, his average against is lower. And that is because he creates more ground balls. If you can get balls on the ground in play, you can turn double plays, you can make things happen, and you don't have to throw as many pitches to get those strikeouts either. So that's a solid plus for Tucker Davidson. As you can see by his ERA of 2.15, it's a surface stat, it doesn't show everything, but he's been consistent with run prevention as well. So it's not like it's a fluke. He did it for an extended period of time. I really want to see Tucker Davidson up in the majors. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me unless someone can answer that for me. Maybe Brian Custard can. But the thing is that he's 25 years old. The rest of the guys in his class have already made it up to the majors. I'm thinking they're trying to get him to get his walks down, but if they would just focus on the fact that he's producing ground balls and that the Braves rotation could really use some help right now, I think it'd be a smart move to bring him up soon. Okay, now that I'm off my soapbox, we can move on to the next prospect on the list, which is Jared Schuster, a guy a lot of us are probably excited about. He was number 9 on the list last year, and this year he's moved up to number 7 for a good reason, of course. And that good reason, of course, is from farmhands graduating. We haven't seen a lot from him yet, because he was drafted in the first round of the 2020 draft, and as you know, with COVID-19, there was no minor league play last year, so he didn't really get to see anything about him. One interesting thing about him is that he was ranked in the top 200 prospects at number 77, but the Braves picked him at number 25. Now, we need to remember that Major League Baseball drafts are not like NFL, where people just pick the best talent available or the best fit for them. A lot of it has to do with slot fees and everything that goes along with that. And so you'll see teams draft a player lower in the first round, or in the first round when they're ranked lower, like a second or third round player, so they can use their funds and stuff like that more heavily later in the draft. And I think that's something that happened with the Braves here. But he was still the top 200 player, number 77 overall, number 8 pitcher out of college. He's an exciting guy to see, so let's see how the scouts graded him. They gave his fastball a 55, a slider 50, control 50, changeup 60, overall 50. So he's got a very solid changeup. Remember, just for reference, and it's not a direct translation, but you had a guy throwing a fastball at 98 miles per hour, and they gave him a grade of 60. They're giving Jared a changeup of 60, so you can tell, you can kind of translate and say, "Whoa, you know, his changeup drops down to 80 miles per hour." So that's a huge change in speed. So if batters get fooled by that with his release, it could be very effective. He's also done very well as far as when he was in college. That's really what all we can go off of, is that he had 5.2 strikeouts per every one walk. And so it looks like he's going to be a guy that the Braves could really use, one of those guys that has solid control. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. It's hard to tell because he was drafted, you know, last year and didn't get a chance to play yet. They estimate that he'll be in the big leagues by 2023. He was a college arm, so he has developed faster than, say, a guy that got signed when he was 16 years old. He's only started one game so far, and he only pitched 3.1 innings. So I'm not really going to give you stats there because they're kind of pointless. But just know that he's in Rome right now. Rome Braves. Next on the list at number 6, who was number 7 last year, moved up a spot due to Ian Anderson graduating as no longer being a prospect, is none other than already seems to be fan favorite William Contreras. He's made a big splash coming into the big leagues, and man, what a good time has it been since Travis d'Arnaud. It looks like he's going to be out at least 60 games. He's been a welcome presence in the dugout, and we're excited for him. He's been doing well, and there's a reason why he was ranked this high. His biggest issue in his game in the minors thus far has been his defense. However, many of the scouts and many of the coaches believe that he took a step forward last year, and which is one of the big reasons that they felt like he was capable to come up last year when the other catchers on the Major League roster were dealing with COVID symptoms. And now, due to injuries, he's found himself as a full-time starter for the Major League Atlanta Braves, and he's been doing solid so far. But let's look at his scouting grades to see what the scouts said before he made it up to the majors. Unsurprisingly, being a catcher, his run is at 40, which really the only fast catcher in the league is JT Realmuto, so it's not a surprise there. His hit tool is at 50, his power is at 45, his arm is 55, which is very promising for a catcher, and they have this fielding at 50 out of 80. The cool thing is that he made the minor league all-star teams in 2018 and 2019. It looks like with his fixed defense, he's going to be a solid major leaguer. The reason we didn't see him more early in the season is because Brian Snitker said, you know what, we don't think this guy is going to be a backup catcher when he makes it to the majors. He is good enough to be a starter, so we want him to have everyday at-bats, which is very, very promising. In the majors, you know, he hasn't had a ton of games. He's only had 13 at-bats, but man, as he made it look easy so far with an on-base percentage of 400 and a slugging of 538. And an average of 348. So he's in a very small sample size of 23 at-bats. He's been very impressive. But what did he look like last year in the minors? Well, in the minors, looked very solid as well. He had an on-base percentage of 345, a slugging of 402, and an average of 279. He does not walk an incredible amount. He had 29 walks and 84 strikeouts last year. But we're in a game now where strikeouts are much more prevalent, so the high strikeout count does not concern me too much. The one thing that does concern me is that at the highest level in 2019, his batting average took a dip. Again, that's not everything, but his on-base percentage took a huge dip as well at 315. But his slugging stayed okay at 354. And he got some hits, and he had 6 home runs in 110 games, though. So his hit tool, he's not going to be blowing us away with his power, it doesn't look like. But he looks like he's going to be a solid overall contributor. Just don't expect him to come out hitting like Travis d'Arnaud did last year. Of course, Travis d'Arnaud took years and years before he finally broke out offensively. So it looks like he's going to be a solid contributor, though, and that's all we can ask of him in his first year. Next on the list, we have Kyle Mueller, who was number 6 last year, as we moved up to number 5 with Ian Anderson. This is a guy that I'm no expert. I'm just a little baffled that he's this high in the rankings. Brian Custer may talk about this a little bit later, but he's definitely worth a top 10 ranking, in my opinion, but he hasn't been performing to what his scout grades say. He was drafted 44th overall in 2016. Scouts and coaches believe he has a chance to make the big league squad this year. He's a big dude at 6'7", so I can see why people are excited for him. His fastball can hit triple digits, and they rank it at 65. But again, I don't really get this grading scale if they're going to give a fastball a 65 if it can reach 100 out of 80. I mean, whatever. A curveball 55, changeup 50, overall 50, with his control being a 45. See, that's the thing that I'm worried about truly is his control. The Braves already have enough guys that have the stuff up on the big league roster, but everyone seems to walk all the time, which more runners on base, higher probability of runs scored. Not a fan of guys that walk a ton of guys. I mean, obviously they're great at what they do if they made it to the major league level, but you get what I'm saying. He has been solid at preventing runs. Over so far in his minor league career, he has a solid ERA of 3.17, right? And the thing that gets me, though, is his walks and hits per inning pitched is too high, in my opinion, to be ready to go, which is 1.33 in the upper minors. Still very solid, don't get me wrong. He can help the Braves contribute. And his average against him last in 2019 was very low, 208. So he does show some promising stuff. The thing that gets me, though, is that in 22 games, he had 68 walks. If he can't get those walks down, I just don't see him coming up quickly and being, you know, the X factor to help the Braves. Can he help the Braves? Yeah, he can contribute, and I'm sure he will. He just needs to get his walks down. He did have 120 strikeouts in 22 games. It's just those walks that really get me. He is good at preventing runs, though, like as far as people hitting the ball off of him. It's just with so many walks, it's hard to imagine that he's going to come up and be the Ian Anderson type that his number 5 in the system ranking is giving him. He's also obviously going to need to knock off some rust, because in his one game so far he started, he gave up 2 home runs and walked 5 people in only 3 innings. So he's going to need to knock off that rust, work on some things, and hopefully he can help the Braves in the future. Next guy on the list is probably one that I'm most excited about, and I don't know if it's because of his actual statistics or more I just enjoy the way he plays the game, and that's number 4, which is none other than Braden Shumake. Okay, he plays shortstop, and a lot of scouts believe that he has the tool set to continue to play shortstop. Is he the shortstop of the future? We don't know. Is Dansby Swanson going to sign an extension, or is he going to reach free agency and leave after not this year but next year? We'll see. Braden Shumake has an estimated time of arrival of 2022, so it'd be perfect for him to take over for Dansby if the Braves decide Dansby is not their shortstop of the future. He was drafted in the first round in 2019, 21st overall. His overall skill set is very solid. His hit tools 55, run 55, field 50, power 50, arm 55, overall 50. His power seems to be much better than Dansby's. His hit tool could be better too. Now, Dansby probably is better defensively, so we'll see. Only time will tell. But he's looking pretty promising. He played college ball just like Dansby did. He's 6'4", you know, he's a tall guy that can possibly have some good range. He's 23 years old, so it's not like he's a 18-year-old kid. There's a lot of maturity differences between an 18-year-old and a 23-year-old. One thing that I really like about him so far in his minor league career, which isn't long, obviously, he got drafted in 2019. He played in 65 games in 2019 across 2 teams, which was Rome and Mississippi, right? And he played most of his games at Rome. So to be fair, these stats probably will not continue to be this high because he was playing most of his games at a lower level. But his on-base percentage was .371. That's way, way better than Dansby Swanson. His batting average is .300, and he can swipe some bases. He had 13 steals in 65 games. And he did strike out 40 times, but he had 25 walks. That ratio is very solid. He had 3 home runs, so his power, he probably needs to tap into that a little bit more for him to really be effective, but the scouts believe he'll hit more home runs than that once he taps into his power. He's obviously got some base running skill with some triples, and he had 74 hits in only 65 games. So I'm thinking that if his defense is good enough to play shortstop, Braden Shumake could really be a difference maker for the Braves in the future. Next up, we have at number 3, who moved up one spot since last year, Shea Langeliers. What's crazy is we have been a big fan of William Contreras, and he wasn't even the top-ranked catcher in the farm system. So what's going to happen? Are the Braves going to continue to roll with William Contreras, or is Shea Langeliers going to take over at some point? what's going to be crazy is surely you're not going to have two solid catchers, one playing, you know, every day and the other one being a backup. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Although the Braves have been known to have one offensive first catcher and one defensive first catcher. Shea Langeliers definitely fits the defensive first catcher. And by fit, I mean he excels as far as most scouts are considered out of all catchers in the minor league systems. He is arguably a top two catcher. Last year, he had the fastest pop time, and what pop time is from the time the ball hits the glove to when it makes it to second base. He recorded the fastest pop time out of anybody. Guys are not going to steal on him. The thing is that unfortunately, less and less people are stealing bases, so that skill is not as important as it used to be, but it's still very important. It's also good to know that out of all positions on the diamond, catcher is the, without a doubt, most important defensive position. So if you have a guy with a very high defensive floor, he will have a solid major league career. Look at a guy like Jeff Mathis. The guy's been in the league for, 16 years? And he's never been a bat-first catcher, yet he always has a spot on the club and always contributes. Shea Langeliers, at a minimum, is going to be a Jeff Mathis type, but he could be even better if his hit tool gets up there. He was drafted 9th overall in the draft of 2019, so he hasn't had a ton of time to play. Just the 2019 season. It's estimated that he's going to come up in 2022. Who knows? But check out these grades. His arm is a 70, like I said. His pop time, that's the strongest arm we've seen so far in these rankings. His power is a 50. His overall is 50, right? And that's because, you know, his hit tool is only a 50. When I say only, that's still very solid, right? His fielding's a 65, and his run's a 40. As you can see, his fielding and his arm is much better than William Contreras. Like, it's not even close. So it's going to be interesting to see if his bat develops. What's going to happen once he's ready to be a contributor at the major league level? Is he a prime trade candidate if the Braves feel like they can go all in on a season? Unfortunately, it doesn't look like the Braves are going to be that type of season this year with the way that they've been performing, unless they drastically improve before the trade deadline. Or are they going to try to roll with Contreras and Langeliers? Who knows? My money would be on that they're going to trade one of them at some point, just because one of them is going to have such good trade value that they're not going to be able to turn down an offer or turn down who they could have possibly get with him. The thing that I'm worried about is that with his hit tool, his on-base percentage is low so far. In 57 games, his OBP is only a 308, and his average is a 249. Now, that's not terrible for a defensive first catcher. Absolutely not. But he strikes out a lot. He struck out 60 times to 19 walks. So he strikes out a ton. He needs to knock down his strikeouts. He's only hit 2 homers, but we have seen in flashes that he can be good offensively. He's had 55 hits in 57 games. So, 56 hits, I'm sorry. And so, I mean, his hit tool could be good enough to where his defensive value is just going to shoot him up to the point to where the Braves can't not start him if they don't trade him. And so that's encouraging. I look for promising things with Shea Langeliers. He deserves his top 3 ranking in the Braves system. Look for him to be a solid major leaguer. Next we have Drew Waters, outfielder. Very good defensively. A lot of people are excited about him. He's a switch hitter. He was drafted in the 2nd round of the 2017 draft, 41st overall by Atlanta. So he's been in Atlanta's farm system the whole time. His hit tool's rated at a 55, his run 60, field 60, power 50, arm 60, overall 55. As you can see, his overall rating is very solid compared to the rest of the people we've looked at. His issue is that his hitting tool is not to the point that scouts thought it would be to this point, but his defense has been excellent. So, we're really excited about this guy. My question, though, is that the Braves already have Ronald Acuna in right, Ozuna in left, and Christian Pache in center, with Michael Harris shooting up. Do the Braves look to have Drew Waters in the outfield and Ozuna be the full-time DH? Because According to scouts, they believe Drew Waters is ready to contribute at some point this year. Is that what happens next year? Or is Drew Waters a prime trade candidate with such a high prospect rating that the Braves could bring back a solid starting pitcher or something like that? It's really going to be interesting to see, especially this year with so many teams that are still technically within competition this year of making the playoffs. There's only like three teams that are three games or lower from 500, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see how the trade deadline plays out. Drew Waters, to me, is a prime trade candidate for the Braves, but we'll see. On to his stats of what he's looked like. Last year in 2019, he had a solid average of .309, and he can steal bases. He's stolen 46 bases in 301 games across all levels. Last season that he played, he stole 16 bases. His issue, though, is that in 134 games, he had 164 strikeouts to only 39 walks. That's a big deal. If he could knock down his strikeouts, though, and get up his walks with a batting average of .309 and a slugging percentage of .459, that could really change some things, right? I mean, that would be huge. I mean, across all levels, his OBP is .352. At the highest level, it was .360. Imagine what would happen if he got on base more because he walked more and didn't strike out as much. Imagine how much higher his slugging percentage could be if he didn't strike out as much. So if he can get his strikeouts down, I think it could be something special. Brian Custard may talk to this later. I know he's a big fan of Drew Waters. I think he might actually be better than Christian Pache. And that leaves us with our number one ranking, which we probably all already knew, which is Christian Pache. Yes, he is the starting center fielder for the Braves right now, and we've seen him in limited action in Major League Baseball. But as we said earlier, he's still technically in prospect status because he hasn't reached those minimums to get there. What can we say about him? We already know a lot about him because we've talked about him a lot. Major League announcers have talked about him a lot. Everyone's talked about him a lot. But one thing we do know is that he has very, very good run. He's super fast, super good arm. He was ranked by some as the best defensive player in the minors last year. So with a very high defensive floor, he's always going to bring value to a major league club. Is he going to be like a Byron Buxton type that has solid defense plus a very good hit tool? That's yet to be seen. He's had 6 years to develop in the minors. He was signed in 2015. His hit tool has not been fantastic. They're giving it a 55. Compared to some other people, maybe he's just not able to adjust to higher level or major league pitching. I don't know. But with his defensive floor, I'm still excited about what he brings to the Braves. When you have a guy that's that good on defense, that can man center field, he's still bringing value to a team, right? It's not about who scores the most runs. It's about who scores more runs than their opponent, right? And it's a combination of offense and defense. You need to have solid defensive guys at the three positions of center field, shortstop, and catcher. If you don't have that, you're going to have some major issues. Look at the Mets. The Mets can't do anything with their terrible defense. Of course, the Mets are ahead of the Braves right now. I mean, that's besides the point. But if the Mets actually had a solid defense, they'd have way more wins because they keep committing errors or they're not reaching balls that most teams would reach. It's a mess without a solid defense. The thing that scares me about Pache, like I said, is his hit tool. So far in the major leagues, he's had 52 at-bats and he only has 7 hits. He strikes out a ton. He has 24 strikeouts to only 2 walks. His batting average in the majors is .135 if you include the 2 games from last year. He's got to step it up offensively if he wants to continue to be a starter on a competitive team like the Braves. Now, I think he'll always be a starter somewhere in the major leagues with his defense, but so far he has a negative .04 wins above replacement in the majors in only 19 games. That's not cutting it. And even with his exceptional defense, he's doing so bad offensively that he's bringing negative value to the team. So, small sample size of 19 games, what it looked like in 2019. Here's the thing, he was okay offensively in the minors. Across all levels, his OBP was 331, and in 2019, across two levels, he had an OBP of 340 in 487 at-bats, with an average of 277. He did strike out quite a bit, 122 strikeouts, but that was in 130 games, and he walked at a decent clip of 43 times, and he hit 12 homers. So, not a ton of power, but enough for a defensive first center fielder. He has some speed too, but you know, speed doesn't always translate to stolen bases. But one year, in 2017, he was showing they had the ability with 32 stolen bases. So if they want to get him to steal bases, there's definitely a possibility that he could do that. So I think it's a good time to take a break. We've talked about all the prospects, or all the top 10 prospects for the Braves, and I really, really, really want to get Brian Custard's perspective on these prospects, because he knows a lot more about them, and he's going to tell us what he thinks about the different prospects, how they rank, and things like that. So I'm really excited. So let's take a break and then jump into what Brian had to say. All right. So before we move on, let's talk about the best Braves group on Facebook, the Atlanta Braves Dugout. That's where everything started. It's where this podcast spawned from. It's got great moderators and great admin team that really allow you to talk your opinion on the Braves without feeling like you have to be positive all the time, without feeling like you need to be negative all the time. You can have true debates about the Braves. You can learn about the Braves, and you get to meet 8,000 plus great fans of the game that you can just talk about the Braves. They have game threads every week that while you're watching the game, you can talk the game with people. And you have active admins and mods who really mod the group to make sure that it's run like a well-oiled machine. So if you have not checked out the Atlanta Braves Dugout group on Facebook, this is me letting you know you should do it. Do it today. Go on your Facebook, join the group, and let's talk some Braves baseball. All right, welcome back from break. So, Brian Custard, let me talk about him a little bit. He knows more about the prospects and the draft and all that more than anybody else I know, so I knew that he was the perfect guy to go to ask some questions about these prospects. I gave my opinion. I trust his opinion even more. So I wanted to give his opinion for all you listeners out there, because I know it's going to benefit you if you care about this sort of thing. So what I did is I sent him a bunch of questions, and he was gracious enough to reply with some answers, and let me tell you, he replied within like an hour or two. So Brian, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to answering these questions, and I look forward to talking to you more about baseball. I know we always have a good time. We like to debate baseball, and I think we have a like mind on a lot of things, but honestly, it's even more fun when we don't and we get to debate it, and I always enjoy talking baseball with you. So thank you so much for sending in these answers to these questions, and I can't wait to read them off to everybody. So first I asked, in these rankings of prospects, in your opinion, are any of them ranked too high? And if they are, why? And Brian said, based on these rankings, he agreed with me here, this is cool. I feel like Kyle Mueller and Jared Schuster are a bit high on the pitching side, and Shea Langeliers is a touch too high on the position player list. With that being said, all of these guys deserve to be in the top 10 list, just not where they're slotted in. Interesting, because I was talking about how I liked Shea where he was at, and Brian says that although he's a top 10 guy, he feels like he should be a bit lower. And I can definitely understand what he's saying here with Kyle and Schuster. Schuster makes sense too. It is really interesting. He does go on to say that Schuster is a very intriguing prospect with an incredibly live arm. However, I feel like his ranking is a bit optimistic on whether he will maintain his velocity gains and newfound command. If he does that, he will justify this ranking, and maybe you could argue him to be the number one pitcher in the system. However, I'm always cautious of young pitchers who have struggled with command ballooning up a prospect ranking based on a small sample sizes of them quote-unquote finding it. I would have Schuster as my number 10, with the caveat that he does have a higher ceiling than Davidson or De La Cruz. Very interesting. I like that take. Now, to talk about Mueller, he says that he is such a conundrum, as he shows signs of the absolute brilliance that should come from a guy with his raw stuff, followed by either injury or total ineffectiveness depending on which portion of his career you're looking at. His throwing motion will always lend itself to blips and command. However, his struggles go for several starts at a time before he rights the ship, and cannot be blamed on quote-unquote just not having it that day. I believe this ranking is based on his raw stuff, as he does have an incredibly high ceiling. However, he's such a tough bet for me with the command issues. I would slide him down a spot or two in the rankings, as he still is probably the best prospect pitcher right now. However, I simply like the other prospects more. To talk about Shea Langeliers, Brian said, Langeliers is a matter of me liking another prospect more than him currently, William Contreras. See, fan favorite for a reason. The Contreras-Langeliers debate is pretty close, but until Langeliers proves that he can hit, Contreras has to have the edge for me. Contreras has good bat-to-ball skills, improving plate discipline, and decent enough power to project him as an above-average hitting catcher, and he's a very agile receiver with a good arm who's put in a ton of work blocking pitches, calling games, and framing pitches. I'll piggyback on that and say that just in the small sample size we've seen in the pros, I agree with Brian here. By the way, he was moving all over behind the plate the other night. Right now, he's probably a league average to slightly above average defensive projection, so he's developing into a very well-rounded player that should be a solid regular with an all-star ceiling in the right years. Langeliers, while an amazing defensive catcher with an absurd pop time and a cannon for an arm, has not shown enough with the stick right now for me to put him over Contreras. He's barreled the ball well at times in his brief pro career, and has plenty of raw power to suggest that he can in fact become an average hitting Major League Baseball catcher. He's just yet to prove it, so for now I can't put him above Contreras. I do feel like Langeliers has the higher ceiling, but I feel that currently Contreras has proven more and raised his floor enough to be considered the better prospect. Great takes, Brian. I like these. These are great. Next, I asked, are there any prospects that are ranked too low? He said, I've already showed my hand with Contreras being a tad bit too low, so I'm going to go with Michael Harris. While he did struggle at Rome as a recent draftee, he did nothing but hit in his previous stops during his professional debut, and continued reports out of the alternate site and his spring training debut have me very excited about this young man. He's a long way from Atlanta and currently a bit of a balloon based on small samples, but I'd have him ranked somewhere in the 7 range above Schuster, Davidson, and De La Cruz, as he's shown the tools to be a solid MLB player with a much higher ceiling than the other three. I wouldn't get crazy with the best prospect in baseball type projections with Harris, but the potential is there, and I simply feel this ranking is a bit conservative. Then I asked, which prospect do you think will rise up the fastest of these 10? And Brian answered, I think that Schuster, Langeliers, Harris, and Waters have the highest ceilings of these 10, and Langeliers is probably the closest to realizing that ceiling. I'd bet that he finds a way to be a league average stick before I bet on Schuster maintaining his command. And if Langeliers can prove that he has an all-star level ceiling, as he's that good of a defensive catcher. Waters is my absolute favorite prospect on this list. See, me and him kind of debate this one a little bit. And I'd probably have him over Pache right now, but we do agree on that. So, it is interesting. Me and Brian both, the Pache versus Waters, we both like Waters better than Pache. So, maybe we do agree. If Waters did not have his lack of patience and incredible batting average of balls in play catch up to him at AAA, he barrels the ball so well when he connects that I do believe his B BABIP, or batting average of balls in play, is sustainable, but a 36% K rate simply doesn't play. He's young, so he's got time. However, until he can show some patience at the plate and draw a few more walks, he will continue to strike out at an unexpectable rate and never realize the potential that his loud tools suggest. Wow. Let me tell you guys something. This is pretty neat. I did not read the answers to these questions before I gave my takes on the prospects on purpose, because I wanted to see how well me and Brian lined up or did not line up. It's really odd that some of these things we lined up so closely, so it's pretty cool. Like I said, Brian and I, we do see eye to eye on a lot of things, and this is pretty neat. Next, I asked, I stated first, we already talked about Michael Harris most likely to shooting up, but besides him, are there any diamond in the rough type prospects that we should keep an eye on? And so this is one I'm really excited about, because this is the type of stuff that Brian excels at. He said, there's a couple guys hanging in the lower parts of the minors that have really loud tools and or stuff that I'm keeping an eye on as they develop, because their skills do have the potential to really change the current ranking. Maki Backstrom will be a low A Augusta to start, and I've been really intrigued by him since he slipped in the draft. With his bat speed and raw power, he could really move through the system, and there's several clips out there showing Backstrom in the cage demonstrating his beautiful swing and the quote-unquote, the ball just sounds different off of his bat ability. Jesse Franklin should start out at high A Rome, and he showed a lot of skill at Michigan before he was drafted. Decent defender, solid hit tool, and average above average power that could develop him into a solid MLB outfielder. Tyler Owens has an electric mid-high 90s fastball and nasty slider with high spin rate. He's a bit on the small side, and his changeup is still in need of development for him to maintain being a starter, but he showed tenacity when being thrown to the wolves against older competition in his pro debut, holding his own at Danville. Walk rate was high, as is usual for a high school pitcher tweaking his delivery, and this did lead to him giving up some runs. He also struck out over a batter an inning, posting 28 strikeouts in 23 innings pitched. Freddie Tarnock, Casey Kalik, Victor Vodnik. While Tarnock is currently starting, I believe all of these guys will end up in the pen eventually, and they all have high leverage reliever ability, absolutely electric, high spin rate, high velocity fastballs, and nasty sliders are Kalik and Tarnock's trademarks. While command has left a little to be desired, which seems to be a trend with Braves pitchers apparently, that was a sidebar by me, both have the pure stuff and ability to develop into high leverage relievers. Vodnik has a similar fastball, but mixes in a changeup and slider that make him unhittable at times. All three could easily be the backbone of a future Braves bullpen. And then I asked Brian, are there any untouchable prospects right now? If so, who? And he just straight out says, I really do not feel that any of the prospects are untouchable right now based on talent. The great, quote-unquote, who's the next catcher of the future debate should probably have a bit more clarity before one of these guys is moved. But right now, I'd trade any one of these prospects for the right price. Brian, thank you so much for sending in the answers to those questions. In my opinion, I think you have the skill to be a writer. So definitely look into that. I think you'd be very good. I'm going to tell you guys, I literally read those questions verbatim, or those answers verbatim, because they were written so well. So thank you for that, Brian. I love those takes, and I trust them, and I know that the listeners have gained a lot of knowledge from your insight on these prospects, so thank you so much. I definitely agree with the no prospect should be untouchable, especially with the way that the Braves are in their competitive window right now. They don't look as good as they were last year, for obvious reasons, but they're still technically in their competitive window with a solid core of players, and if you bring in the right talent, that could really boost this Braves team into a very solid team that could compete to a World Series with just some tweaks to the bullpen and the rotation. The Braves have the prospects to do that right now, so I do agree with that statement. And I do not think that any of these guys, like you said, are the Ronald Acuña type to where you just don't trade them. I think the closest one with that you wouldn't want to trade as far as talent is probably Michael Harris based on what you said. But I still like you. If there was the right package, why would you say no? I know that you're a big fan of Drew Waters. I wouldn't mind trading Drew Waters. Although, I wouldn't even be mad if the Braves traded Pache and kept Drew Waters and brought him up now, if that is what it took to get the right guy. So, I'd be fine with trading one of Pache or Waters. I'd be fine with trading one of Langoliers or Contreras. And then there's so many pitchers that, for some reason, the development of the Braves pitchers, all of them walk way too many people. So, and we've seen all the stars fade on so many pitching prospects over the years that if the Braves can get solid trade return for some of these pitchers, I think they should do it. All right, that is this week's episode. Thank you again to Brian Custard for giving his answers to the questions that I sent him. Great insight as always. Thank you so much. We'll have to do this in the future sometime. I really, really appreciate you. And to you listeners, I appreciate you just as much for spending your time to listen to this episode. It means the world to me that you take time out of your day to listen. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast so that it'll get more visualization. You can find us on Twitter at Braves Dugout Pod. You can find the Facebook page, and you can email the show at bravesdugout@gmail.com for any business things, for any ideas, if you want to be part of the show, whatever. You can always get a hold of me. I'm very responsive. Thank you so much, and as always, go Braves.